before we started looking into porn as a topic, I'm like, oh, that's my thing. That's my jam. Jenna Jameson kind of looking women and these super elaborate, cheesy stories.
Because you have moved on.
I have definitely moved on.
Welcome to Two Hot Wives,
a podcast where two friends in open marriages explore the exciting world of unconventional sex.
Hey, hotties. I'm Kat.
And I'm Ams, and we're the Two Hot Wives.
So tonight we're talking about pornography.
Which is not my favorite subject matter, for the record.
I would agree with that. But it's changed so much over the time that we have been exposed to it, right? As teenagers.
Yeah. I think that's a totally fair statement. Like, this is not your mother's porn.
This is not your grandmother's porn.
Right. Not your daddy's porn. Like there is some really interesting stuff that people are putting out there now. And maybe it's worth revisiting and overcoming some of these like judgments that I have about pornography.
Well, and I think it's become such a big part of our culture.
Yeah.
Because of the accessibility of it.
Yeah.
That it would be a mistake not to talk about it.
I think that's
it would be really omitting something that's really pervasive in our culture right now.
That's a really good point. There's a whole generation of folks just a smidge younger than us who
have had it in front of their eyeballs every day, everywhere.
They've had access to porn since they were adolescents. And like a whole generation that learned how to do the sex from the porn.
Yeah.
It's been very influential. So it's interesting to revisit now a little bit further on in our sexual journey and see if it can be like a useful tool in the toolbox. Mm-hmm. And to get a little bit more information about what modern day porn looks like.
Right.
We did a great interview with Inka Winter.
From 4Play Films.
Yes. So she's a writer and producer and director of feminist ethical pornography. And that stuff is hot. Her stuff is hot, hot, hot.
Yes. It's pretty hot.
Yeah.
The one I'm thinking of is the one we still talk about all the time. It's the only porn I've ever watched that I still think about. Like that threesome.
Yes.
Experience. Oh, that
amazing.
Crazy.
We talked with her about that in the interview.
Yeah.
All right. But before we get into it, Kat, what are we drinking tonight?
We are drinking the Lemon Blackberry Mule.
It is delicious.
It's good.
Really like it. It's super lemony.
We were just talking about the fresh lemon. Yeah. Makes all the difference because you muddle it with the blackberries, a little bit of sugar, and then shake it up with the Nowadays, which is the cannabis spirit that we've been using.
Yeah.
It now comes in 10 milligrams.
Yes, be careful with that. It's delicious. And, this really speaks to using really good, fresh ingredients makes such a difference.
Yeah.
Don't buy shitty margarita mix from a jar or a can or whatever. Like make it yourself.
Yeah.
It's so much better that way.
It is. And if you make it on Friday, you can drink it all weekend long. that's about how long it lasts.
That's the
issue with making it yourself is – it's not going to last unless you're having a party.
I was going to say, make a big batch for friends and then all of you drink it. Yes. It's just one more excuse to invite a bunch of friends over.
Yeah.
And with our cocktails.
We need some cocktails. So, Ams, what's your hot tale for tonight?
My hot tale is a saga. It's going to keep going on and on on.
Our hot tales are getting more and more
elaborate.
Inventive.
Yeah. Well,
right?
Yeah.
Kind of creative, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so as you know, I celebrated a birthday recently.
Yes. Fun night.
It was a super fun night.
Small group karaoke. Yes. But our small group is 30 people.
Amazing.
It was so much fun.
So much fun. We had a blast. Mm-hmm. But my hotel is not from my birthday night. It is my birthday present from Mr. Ams.
This is a good one.
Yeah.
I know this birthday present. Okay. Yes.
Well, so as you know, we've kind of have this tradition of doing threesomes on our birthdays, right? It started kind of after the round robin threesome, and then some birthdays popped up, and like,
well, and you know what the guys are always asking for the birthday?
An MFM threesome.
Yeah. No, not an MFM. No, they want the FMF. But for some reason, it is tradition on Mr. M's birthday to always have a MFM.
Yeah. Funny how that
did you work that?
I you know.
Because it's you.
Yeah.
It's yours.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
How did you do that?
I'm not entirely sure. I think I'm like an idiot savant on this. Like, I just was like, oh, I don't know. This would be fun. Yeah, that's happened almost every one of his birthdays for the last like 4 years.
He's got a birthday coming up.
He does. That's right. We have something else planned, which could be super fun. Yeah. A bunch of people are involved. But for my birthday, we were kind of like riffing on the idea of what is he going to give me in terms of a threesome? And he's like, you know, he was inspired by you and Mr. Cat doing 30 days of sex in 1 month, right? Uh-huh. You did like 30
every morning. Actually, I just got orgasms every morning.
Which, well, that's sex, but
No, but I mean, like, it was all about me.
That's awesome.
It was pretty awesome.
That's awesome.
30, and it wasn't even my birthday.
That's true. What did you do for that? Like, we're both pretty clever.
It was a threesome.
Yeah.
With Mr. Cat and Mr. Ams.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, sorry. Your birthday. My birthday. Talking about me. Yeah. We're talking about you.
We're talking about me right now.
Sorry. Bitch. Okay. I'm okay.
Did you get that little frog out of your throat? That's good.
Right.
That's
out. Good. Jumped right out.
So we're riffing on this idea, and Mr. Ams was like, well, what if I got you a threesome every day for 30 days? And I was like,
holy shit.
That sounds awful. My cookie would like light on fire. It's a terrible idea. Cannot do 30 days in a row of MFM threesomes.
No.
But maybe, what if we do MFM of the Month Club?
Yay! I am such a fan of this.
Why would anybody want anything else for their birthday?
I don't know.
Yeah. If it was like such a eureka moment. So the birthday present is once a month, Mr. Ams is setting up an experience that involves at least two guys.
Right. At least.
At least. So
we're saving that for another episode, right?
Mostly I'm just trying to get material for the podcast through the rest of the year. It's going to be a little bit of a challenge because I don't currently have like 12 partners to reach out
to. Can you not recycle some of them?
So I think that Mr. Ams is already thinking about how to get creative with this. Yeah. But of course, January was Mr. Cat. He's my Mr. January. Uh-huh. We had a lovely time.
Which was actually your birthday.
It was actually on. Was it actually on my birthday? No, it was like 2 days before or something. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And it was lovely. And, I was still dealing with like a lot of family drama. So it was kind of like crazy girl sex, but I can have crazy girl sex with Mr. Ams and Mr. Cat.
Right.
So it was good. It was an amazing experience. And then February was at another friend of mine. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Ams was not going to tell me. He was not going to tell me. And then he like let it slip 2 days before. And I was like, so.
Did he let it slip on purpose?
No, it was completely out of the blue. He just said,
"He's usually so good at this."
I know. He really was pissed off that he tripped up. It was pretty funny. But we met at the bar, and he and Mr. Ams had kind of wanted to give just a few minutes by ourselves while Mr. Ams waited at the bar. And he's like, "You don't have to. But if you were willing to send me a few pictures of the two of you guys when you're upstairs, then that would be really cool. And I really like that. And then I'll come up and join you like 15 minutes later." And by the way, 15 minutes goes really fast.
Yes.
Like crazy, crazy fast.
I'll bet. Especially because you're not naked.
Right.
It's not like, and go.
That's right. You kind of have to get there
take
and
your clothes off. You have to talk. You have to kiss. You have to.
Yeah.
Because well, he dances too.
He does dance. But, we had already gone to the bar and we had a little bit to eat. And we kind of like, did small talk about work and stuff.
Okay.
Like that.
So if you give that part like 3 minutes, you still only have 12.
Right. Having gotten that out of the way. Yeah. We only had 15 minutes.
Right.
But there was a big, beautiful, like full length mirror that was kind of on the floor, up against the wall. And I had like thigh highs on and a little sweater dress and a thong. And I let him sort of pull the dress up so that my butt was showing. Bum. And then he took the picture from the view of the mirror. So it was like the two of us kissing together with my butt. It was very boudoir-esque. Wow. It was really cute. It's really, really cute.
He is quite the photographer.
He's got a good eye. Like yeah. He's got a good eye for ankles. And
he works it though. Like he's yeah. He's an amateur sort of photography buff. He's into it.
Is he really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Probably because I'm so anti-picture. I had no idea. I had no idea I was into pictures.
Yeah.
Anyway, he set up that shot and it was like really beautiful. So we sent that to Mr. Ames and then we're kissing on the couch and we take my dress off. I still have my thigh highs on and he goes down between my legs when I'm laying down on the couch. And he's like, take a picture. So I grabbed the phone and kind of held it up so that my body was showing and him kind of like between my legs, kissing my thighs, mm-hmm. that sort of thing, was the only thing that you can see. And I snapped that picture and I was like, damn, that's fucking hot.
You took a picture.
I took a picture and I shared it with Mr. You took a picture
to send to your husband. Did. You naughty girl.
I did.
Wow.
Yes.
That's a big deal.
It was a big deal. I was pushing a boundary.
Yeah.
And
how did
fun.
It feel? You liked it.
I liked it. It was fun. We did it from my phone, so I felt like I can control yep. it. And I really kind of liked it. So, you know, I'm playing
That's
around
hot.
The boudoir photography episode and just kind of reclaiming some of these. Like, I can share my pictures with who I want to share them, how I want to share them has been like very empowering.
Awesome.
So, yeah. I played around
That's
with
That's so cool.
Yes. And for those of you who are looking for something a little more salacious in the hot tail, Felix had never experienced anal sex. The look on your face, you're like, oh, you're really going to talk about that.
Here we go.
Yeah.
You know, we haven't even had the full cocktail yet.
I know. Maybe
we're only halfway through. Take another sip.
Yeah, let me take another sip. Anyway,
uh-huh, okay.
to play up a little bit of like the hot wifey vibe, Mr. Ames, he's like, it's your choice. You have to do anything you don't want to do. But I think it'd be really hot if like at the bar, you whispered, I heard you want to fuck me in the ass.
Oh my God.
Just so that Mr. Ames could see his face.
I love that. Oh my God. And I also love like the bartender and all the people around. They might not know exactly what you're saying, but they see that like back and forth little flirting thing that you're doing. And then you say something to him and his face gets all crazy.
Yes.
People watch a little bit.
Oh, I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
But you know.
It makes it fun a little bit because it's anonymous. Anyway, sorry. What? Sidebar.
Well, and it's like we really are kind of living our best lives.
Oh, my gosh. We're having so much fun. We're not even thinking about it anymore.
Right. Right. And if other people see that and they like – I don't know, hopefully are inspired to go on and like have fun and live their best lives, then awesome. That's be inspired by me telling a guy that he can fuck me in the ass.
Oh my God, that's so funny. Oh my God, I'm dying right now.
I'm going to put it on an inspirational quote. Just
I might hang it in my house somewhere.
You're like crocheted.
That is your grandma's inspirational sex quote.
That's right. That's right. So we did like play in that space. And, he's like, if you want to, that'd be really fun. I've never done that before. And I was like, well, it requires a little bit of warm up. And
did you give him a little class?
Well,
probably had done his research.
I didn't really want to be like, okay, you do this and you do that. So I turned to Mr. Ames and I'm like, you got to warm me up if we're going to do this. So he did some like digital play and that sort of thing to kind of get me ready mm-hmm. for the anal. Mm-hmm. And for the anal. and then like I got on top of him and kind of guided him in so that he really didn't have to do any of the work.
We did a whole episode on this, Ames.
I did almost say,
you
know,
if back
you wanted
into
to,
it, yes, you know, yes, you're in control, not him. There's a whole list of to-dos.
But honestly, I feel like if somebody wants to fuck me in the ass, they should listen to the anal episode first and get all the tips and tricks so they don't have to re-explain it because I've already done the work.
True.
So,
but it is in your best interest. Wait, to make
it
sure
is in my best interest.
He gets it.
That's right. That's right. It's win-win. That's fair. Anyway, we did it. It was super fun. Okay. And so we both like broke boundaries that night, which is always sexy, fun little kink. of mine.
That's super hot.
And that was it. That was February. Like when we record another part one, I can talk about March.
Yes,
you it's can. Gonna be good. It's gonna be good. Yeah, so that's my hot tail.
That's pretty hot.
Yeah.
So we're gonna take a little break.
Yeah.
And when we come back, we're gonna talk about pornography. And we're back.
Yeah.
So, Ams, what is pornography? What counts as pornography?
I am so glad that you asked, Kat.
Yeah. Because you know the answer.
I did a little research. And that my favorite sort of quote about pornography comes from a Supreme Court justice.
Of course it does.
Yeah. And it was like an obscenity case in the 60s.
Oh,
and
he I know was this
asked,
quote.
Yes, right. He yeah. was asked, how do you know it's obscenity? And the answer was, I know it when I see it. I can't define it, but I know it when I see it. Essentially, yeah, like what is pornography? It's sexual content, sexual subject matter mm-hmm. that is designed to titillate, to arouse. It's like the purpose, prurient interest is the mm-hmm. fancy legal term, but like the purpose is to get the little tingle between your legs.
So would the Sears catalog in the 1950s and 60s?
The Sears.
In the 1950s.
Yeah.
Would that count as pornography? Because actually, I don't think it was designed for that. You know, back in that time, there wasn't anything out there. So little boys would see like a woman in a brassiere bra.
Like the lingerie.
And, yeah, the lingerie okay. part of the catalog. I think that was a thing.
Was that?
I mean, I don't know that would count as pornography, but.
Right.
Little boys weren't looking at the Sears.
I mean,
catalog.
Little boys don't need a lot to kind of get their mind in that space. So, yeah, maybe. Well, okay. So technically, no.
Right.
By the like legal definition, because if it has artistic or educational or sales value, right, mm-hmm. or spiritual value, then it does not count as pornography.
Okay.
On the flip side, right, obscenity. So there's like porn. The other quote I love is, so like erotica is what turns me on. Pornography is what turns you on.
That
right.
makes sense.
Because it's like, oh, your stuff is, ugh. And my stuff is like awesome and high art. But obscenity would be something that depicts like something that's criminal or immoral. Or so it's like a step beyond just pornography to something that could be controlled or limited.
Well, except for in recent times, pornography was behind a counter with a cover.
Right, it was more limited.
It was much more limited, and it was harder to get, I suppose, if you were, you know, a young man under the age of 18.
Right. Or you would go to your, like, your daddy's Playboy collection.
I was just
gonna
say, go look in the attic.
Yeah,
it's got his Playboys up there.
Yeah, underneath the bed or in the closet or something like that. I definitely found my dad's Playboys at some point. And like, feels like a rite of passage for old people. But yeah, so like, what is pornography? It is designed to turn you on. And of course, it's been around forever, like literally thousands of years. You can go back to like ancient Greece or Rome.
Took
or
a lot
Turkey.
Longer to produce. They had to paint it. They had to etch it in the
wall. Etch it in the stone. That's right.
It wasn't a big moneymaker.
It probably was a big moneymaker because, you know,
it took you years.
It took
years
a long time.
To get that
Yeah. So, what are your thoughts on pornography? Do you think it's a useful tool for people?
Yeah, I think it can be. I think it can be fun to explore as a couple, mm-hmm. maybe to see things that are different than what you've experienced in the past. You mm-hmm, can, mm-hmm. I mean, there's a million genres. There's just
Right.
And so you can choose something that you think you might be interested in. And when you see it, you're going to go, yep, that sounds cool. Or, mm-hmm. yep, that looks cool.
That's hot. That turns me on.
or not, you know, so but you can really explore. Mm-hmm. I think it can be harmful too.
Tell me know? More.
Well, I think that young men who maybe, you know, who have a lot of access to it mm-hmm. Might watch it quite a bit mm-hmm. and get certain ideas about what sex is and what sex with a partner is supposed to be. And I think that can be harmful to their future relationships.
Yeah. I don't know that it's necessarily limited to men too.
Oh,
right.
No, of course.
I think that if you're watching pornography as a form of sex education, right? Like this is what sex should look like. Mm-hmm. And you're using that and want to bring it home to a partner, like that it's a visual medium. It's an art that's designed to look good on camera. It's not necessarily what great sex looks like at home. So I think that can be a problem for both men and women.
Sure. Yeah.
So have you heard the phrase ethical pornography?
I have.
So how would you define that?
That's a tough one because I think ethical means different things to different people. I think we're all participants involved are there of their own free will and not being coerced in any way, are actually wanting to do the things that are being asked of them.
Right.
You know, I don't like the idea of anyone, male or female, feeling coerced or like they have to do this or even under duress for money or resources don't have, you know, that they feel like that's what they have to do to make a living. So I think anything that eliminates all of those barriers is ethical. I think if you're an adult who is making their own decisions that this is what they want to do, I think that's fine.
Right.
I think that's ethical.
Right. I think that's right. That nobody should be exploited in the process.
I do have a bit of porn that I find repulsive.
Okay.
And I am definitely going to yuck someone's yum.
Mm-hmm.
I find it extremely offensive, the porn that depicts a woman who's way underage.
Mm.
And even though probably by law she is 18when she's doing that,
right.
But they're making her look like a 14-year-old or a 12-year-old.
Right. Sort of pedophilia.
It's all over the place
on
some of the social media sites.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's not ethical. I mean, if we're talking about ethical porn and, you know, they might be perfectly happy to be doing what they're doing. They're consenting adults making a decision to make this porn.
Yeah.
But the porn itself, I find extremely offensive.
Well, so that would actually meet the Supreme Court definition of obscenity, right? that like if even though it might be legal, right, it's not actually pedophilia.
It's depicting that.
And so that would be depicting a criminal act that could be obscenity and that could be blocked potentially.
Right. But they're not putting it out there like that.
Well, they're kind of going as close to the line as they can without crossing it.
Right.
And
so they call her a teen, mm-hmm. which is 18.
Right.
Can be. But they're making her look like she's 12 or 14.
I feel you. Yeah. I mean, I hear you. Look, it's sex and sexual interest isn't always PC. That being said, if you're putting content out there that plants the seed of the idea that it is okay for much older men sometimes to be having sex with very, very young women or even girls, like that should not be glorified.
Right.
Just like the super incredibly violent stuff that's out there. Like, do you really want to sexualize and glorify that stuff?
Right. And I feel differently about the bondage and all of that
stuff.
When it's clearly, you know, consensual, it's clearly doesn't look like a crime. Right.
Right. Yeah. It's, you know, you don't have to like it all, but I think it's appropriate to say, you know, some of this just goes beyond the boundaries of not just good taste, but like beyond the boundaries of morality.
Yeah.
That's okay. You can be a slutty little slut and still have morals.
Well, and I tend not to want to yuck anybody else's yum. You know, that's kind of a thing.
Right.
But
right.
In this case,
I get you.
I'm willing.
We're going to do a lot more research between now and then, but I've started to look at stuff and I find that a lot of stuff that I used to turn to, I now find kind of gross.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, well, maybe like, let's get into like,
okay,
some of my earliest experiences with pornography. I had a best friend growing up whose mom worked for the cable company. And so she got all the channels, like all the cable channels, including the Playboy channel and like Skinamax. And what was the other one that was not Playboy? I can't remember back in
Hustler?
The day. It was all softcore. It was all softcore and porn, but we would like
Penthouse.
Maybe it was Penthouse. Yeah. Maybe it was Penthouse. But we would like go into the den at midnight and watch all of this softcore porn. And we were probably
middle schoolers.
I don't think so. I think she would have stopped it if she'd known. But like all of this was, you know, 90s, very airbrushed, like super beautiful, super lots fake. It's like Jenna Jameson kind of looking women and very mediocre looking men and these super elaborate, corny, cheesy stories. Like I remember one Cinderella version and like she's drying the window with her boobs like in circular motion. And I'm like, this is a very inefficient way to dry a window. But it was, you know, like it was silly. It was fantasized. It was super plastic. Yeah. And so for
years.
That's
your favorite.
For years, I thought this is my genre of porn. Like high production value, cheesy plot lines, 90s porn. And like before we started looking into porn as a topic, I'm like, oh, that's my thing. That's my jam. I don't like amateur porn. I don't like anything where a woman is like being forced, which is a lot of the amateur porn out there is like deep, deep throating dicks until you vomit and stuff like that. Like I don't like any of that stuff. Mm-hmm. But all of my exposure to pornography for the first like 10 years was just this 90s Vivid Video, you know, Playboy, very unreal versions of porn. Nothing looked like real sex to me. What about you? Like, do you remember the first time you ever saw porn?
It's funny when you were telling your story about your friend's mom. I too had a friend's mom. I think I was 11.
Yeah.
Maybe a little older, but she was 2 years older than me.
Oh, naughty.
Terrible influence. But I would go over to her house after school. My mom wasn't home. And she would go under her mom's bed and pull out all this stuff. Yeah, it was pretty cool, actually, at that age to see all that. Because my mom didn't have any of that cool stuff.
Oh,
or she hid it better.
This is why we put locks on the door.
So it had some magazines. There was some vibrators.
Mm-hmm.
And like some feathers, boas, stuff like that.
Okay.
And we kind of looked through the magazines and my friend was like, do you know what this is for? And she's buzzing it in my face. Yeah, I had no idea.
Massager, like, neck massager.
Yeah. So she told me all about it. But I get that that's not actually porn, but I don't remember ever seeing actual like video porn. So my version of that would have been the magazines and just the sexual, you know, paraphernalia in this box.
Yeah. Well, so think back, like, when do you think you actually watched a video for the first time? Maybe you were already married.
I think I was probably already married.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I was married before I even had a vibrator.
Right. I remember you saying you had, like, really hadn't masturbated until you'd already been married. So I'm assuming like you probably didn't watch a video, but do you remember ever like early on you and Mr. Cat like renting a video or getting a DVD or something? Oh yeah. All right. Bring it.
So this wasn't that long ago though, but so for a very long time, Mr. Cat and I were both off on Mondays.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so he would take the kids to school and then he'd come home and we would have like some champagne or some orange, you know, orange juice champagne thing. And we would play a video, porn video. But these were like Andrew Blake.
I don't know, that's
just the one director that comes to mind. His were very artsy and very cool.
Oh, is this like black and white stuff?
Some of it was black and white.
I think I've seen some of it.
It was pretty hot.
I think when we went to the Scarlet Ranch in Denver, were they playing?
They could have been playing
Andrew Blake
videos. Yeah. They were, actually. So. That's right.
That's why I know the name. Yeah, they're very artistic.
They're very artistic. Yeah. So we were watching that. And then, you know, I would be wearing like lingerie and Mr. Cat would take pictures of me.
Yeah.
And so we would watch the porn to kind of get us warmed up because it's like 9 o'clock on a Monday.
Right. So right. You're pounding like the mimosas to get in the mood.
We need a little bit of lubricant.
I get that. Yeah.
Yeah. So we did watch that porn. It doesn't seem like it was that long ago though. My kids were, it's probably 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah. About 15 years ago. That's a while back.
This was pre-lifestyle.
Yeah.
It was fun.
Yeah, sounds fun. Yeah. I think it's it's not super common for Mr. Ams and I to put porn on, but like sometimes if you're trying to transition from one thing to another, it can kind of put you in the mood.
Yeah.
I've always had like really conflicted feelings about pornography. I'll be like, okay, this is kind of turning me on, but I'm also feeling kind of bad about the fact that it's turning me on. You know?
You're feeling a little guilty?
Yeah. Like, well, like, that's, I think, why I like the cheesier ones, because then I feel less like, oh, this, like, does everybody there really want to be there? Or is like, do you know what I mean?
But the
I
90s just, porn seems like the Disney Channel.
I guess maybe, yeah. Honestly, I think to like a whatever 12-year-old girl or something, yeah, it seemed more like fun and fresh and silly and yeah. So,
well, that makes a lot of sense to me, actually. Okay. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I could see that. I probably should have watched 90s porn.
There you go.
When I was.
Yes. Well, friends of ours kept talking about that the Pirates, the Vivid Video, is the highest production cost pornography out there. It's called Pirates. I've never seen that one. I've seen a lot of the other ones that are really high production value. So maybe between now and then I'll watch Pirates and report back on it, because it's supposed to be super cheesy in that category. So one last hurrah to 90s porn.
Because you have moved on.
I have definitely moved on. I've definitely moved on. So recently, Mr. Ams actually was the one who turned me on to the 4Play film site. And you had mentioned also Erica Lust's site.
Ex Confessions.
Yeah. And both of those women are producing or distributing porn that's more feminist. It's like more female friendly. It's you know, the dudes are hotter, which is nice.
Right.
Yeah. And the women are like still beautiful, but like more normal looking, not all, you know, enormous tits and like absolutely perfect from head to toe with like bleached assholes and all of the stuff that you get in 90s porn.
Right.
And so, and the lighting is softer and there's a little bit of a story. So it's just like, sometimes it can feel a little too, like, chill.
Too soft. Yeah. I got that feeling a little bit too.
But I, you know, I enjoy it. I enjoy it a lot more than some of the other stuff that I used to watch. Yeah. That's what inspired us to do this episode, is to explore pornography a little bit broader than our past experiences with it.
Right. Right. And that brings us to modern time, right? I mean, it's so much more of a female-centered industry right now as well.
It certainly like can be.
When I think about like the cam girls and some of the other things that I would consider pornography.
Oh, sure.
Right?
Yeah.
A lot of these women are working for themselves.
Yeah.
Kind of like Uber.
I know what I mean? Yeah.
So women are really taking over the industry, I think. I don't know
in terms of like who's actually making the money, right? Are they being produced by men in the background? I don't know. But I love that more people can own their own content. They have more say in terms of like what they're actually doing in front of the camera. Maybe they get to choose the other performers that they're going to work with.
There was a documentary on Netflix. I think it's actually a series. I think it's called Hot Girls Wanted. But it's a series of different aspects of
camgirling,
camgirl, film industry, porn. Interesting. And it's so it hits different aspects. And so there is some of that in there that are talking about women making their own money, being in charge of themselves. It seemed neutral to positive, at least.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I think there's still a bunch of dudes making a bunch of money off of women deep throating dicks, but that's okay. Like,
there's probably a bunch of women making lots of money off of women deep throating dicks.
Right. Like,
as long as the women want to deep throat the dicks,
then it's okay. Then it's ethical.
Then I think that's okay.
Yeah.
Well, and they're not under duress or coercion and all the things that we talked about before, right?
Right. Well, and one of the things that I really have loved about some of the ethical porn and feminist porn that I've looked at is you can see on the women's face that they're really enjoying themselves versus like the ones that look like they're in pain. Cause like legitimately they're probably in pain when they're going, you know, when they're going through the scene. So, I like that it's more pleasure centered, more female centered. And like eventually I'll find some of it that's super hot, like the Ménage à Trois episode or the film that from Inca Winter, which is why we reached out to her for an interview, because that porn so fucking so hot. Mr. Iams and I found it first. I think we've already talked about it a little bit. But it's so hot. We're like, okay, guys, you got to come over and watch this porn. God. And we've done that with like at least one other couple. We're like, guys, just like, let's just watch this porn.
The porn Sherpas.
Yeah. But it was just like three super hot people just like devouring each other. It was like the craziest, sexiest thing I've ever seen. And we talk with Inka in our interview about that film and other films that she's done.
Yeah. So let's bring on our interview with Inka.
We're back with Inka Winter. Inka is an erotic filmmaker and founder of the website Foreplay Films, an independent all-women's porn production company. She's also a certified sex educator, counselor, and provides desire and arousal coaching. She's a YouTuber and all-around sexy Renaissance woman. So, Inka, thank you so much for joining us.
Welcome.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
So I want to ask you, what is your definition of ethical pornography?
Yeah, this is like a really interesting question. And I just sort of like was discussing this at XBIS. It's one of the porn trade shows with people. And I think that ethical is about how you interact with cast and crew. Mm-hmm. And sort of all the agreements and the, you know, payment and consent and all of that. So I think in this world, some people maybe understand ethical porn as something that is also sort of like visually or what is filmed. Mm-hmm. And I think that's sort of a point of discussion, because if the crew and the talent is on board with everything and doing everything consensual, then the question becomes sort of like, can you define what's being filmed as ethical or not ethical? I think to me, I kind of consider maybe what's on camera more in terms of like, is it female friendly? Is it feminist? How does it influence our culture? Yeah, you know, there is an ethical component too, but I think it's a little bit harder to define or pinpoint, in my opinion.
Sure. So it's more about how it's being produced as opposed to the content that's being put in front of viewers.
I think that is a good definition, but also I think that there is a part of me that's sort of like, you know, we're influencing culture and this and that, like, mm-hmm. you know, I have thoughts about it and questions, mm-hmm. but at the same time, I feel like if people get together and they're all on board of doing a certain thing, and it's consensual, then I would say that it is ethical.
Ethical. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Inka, what are some of your earliest experiences with pornography, and were they positive or not?
Yeah, it's funny because I get this, obviously, this question all the time. And I grew up in a cult.
You grew up in a cult?
Oh, goodness.
I grew up in a cult in Austria.
Wow.
And so, I mean, TV or any of those things weren't part of my life until like very, very late. So this whole like early experience of pornography, I don't have.
Mm.
But I had too many experiences of seeing actual sex happen in the context of
I was just going to say, most of the cults I know about are sex cults. So,
yeah.
Wow.
So this is totally true. But so pornography to me really was something that then, you know, in my life, like I think anybody, even if you don't watch porn, you see pornography here and there. You kind of get an idea because it's sort of like it's hard to escape once you're on the internet. But I think for me, it was more when I lost my libido for a year, and I was kind of like thinking about what can be done about this. And I was like, oh, people watch porn for this kind of stuff. And that's when I, for the first time, actively was looking for porn and really didn't find anything that I felt like I could relate to or was arousing for me. And which is also really how this whole journey of making porn myself started, I guess.
Yeah. What was it that inspired you to start?
Really for me, it was the lack of something. And this was before, you know, now I think that feminist sort of like female friendly or whatnot, pornography has a bigger space. But when I was looking for it, it didn't. So I was under the impression that nobody was making any content like this. And I was just like, wait, we're 50% of this planet, women, right? Like, why isn't anybody making content for us? Like, we're also sexual beings. And so, you know, in my situation where I was with a partner, and it would have been really helpful for us in our sex life and our relationship to have this kind of content, I was coming from a place of sort of making something that's in a way therapeutic for women, but also for couples. I mean, obviously for men too, but you know, like there is also a lot of content out there that for a lot of men works. So.
Right, this is not a problem you have to solve.
Exactly. And then one day I sort of saw this like GQ Spain, like 50 Shades of Grey inspired like erotic fashion video. And I was like, oh, that's what I want porn to look like. And this is that's me coming hot. From a, yeah, because I'm coming from the fashion background, right? Like I'm a costume designer and fashion designer.
Yes.
So like this editorial world was something that I was already part of. And I was like, oh yeah, I can just take the thing that I already do and just add sex to it. And then that's that.
Yeah.
So we've watched a few of your films, and I have to say, like the hottest thing I've ever seen
was the menage a trois.
Oh my gosh, I couldn't look away. It was so incredible. How do you decide what you're gonna film? What is your inspiration?
Yeah, so I actually work really closely with talent, and so when I met Kira Noir, and I was kind of like, you know, let's shoot together, and I was like, you know, I do things that talent like wants to do, and so I just, you know, let her know that I'm open to whatever she wants to bring to me. And she like is a bi person who wanted to kind of like show that on camera. And so she brought those two, you know, scene partners, Demi Sutra and Rob Piper. And then I just took that and sort of created that space and sort of created that little like, I mean, storyline, minimal. And, you know, did the camera and did all of that. But, you know, the whole what she wanted to express, that came from her.
Mm. I love that. So it's not just objectification of the subject matter. It's they are getting to choose the subject. I love that.
Yeah. And they get to choose the subject and the people they're shooting with.
Yeah.
That's great. So,
and I feel like that's the chemistry and the intimacy and the sexual tension comes from them actually being into each other, you know? Yes.
You could very much tell that they were super into each other.
Oh, yeah.
So I think there are still people out there who identify as feminists who believe that any pornographic material is just sort of inherently harmful or exploitative to women. So what would you say to somebody who takes that really hardline position?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, we people need to be able to choose what they want to do in their lives and with their bodies. And I think when you kind of, and I, to me, that's feminism, is having the choice to do whatever I want to do with my life and with my body. And if that is upheld, then I think, you know, content can be feminist, and there's nothing inherently anti-women in porn. If they choose to do this thing, they're having fun, and this is something that they want to be doing. Who are we to tell them that they're not allowed, or that's not like right for them, or that's, you know, against our values as women? I feel like to tell women that you know, pornography is inherently like anti-feminist is just very patronizing.
Yes,
and
yeah, I agree,
because, you know, it's like telling them what to do is something with that. This is, feminism is about getting away from the whole telling women to do what is right or wrong to do with their bodies.
As if our sexuality is somehow for men. Like if we're sexual, then that's sort of giving in to what the men want instead of what we want. We want sex. Right. We want to be sexual. We want to be sensual.
Right. And that's definitely, the assumption that
it's not just for them.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. The assumption that porn is not feminist is the assumption that women don't enjoy porn.
Right.
And aren't sexual in that way.
Right. Mm-hmm. When you're creating your content with the sort of female gaze and female empowered pornography, how does that look different from mainstream pornography that you might otherwise see?
Yeah, I mean, I think to me, there's like a couple of different elements. I think one of them is visual, because I think like to women, there's just more senses involved in sexuality. And that's why, you know, some of the mainstream pornography where there's a lot of focus about the genitals and it's just very like sort of sterile lit genitals, that works for men, a lot of men, right? Mm-hmm. Which is why it's there, and this is why there's more of it and whatnot. But I think for most women, it's about sort of like a feeling that's created. And I think for most women that I talk to also, there's so much more to be read in facial expressions. I don't know if this person is enjoying the sex based on her vagina.
Right.
But like in her face,
yeah.
In her face, I can see if she's liking it or not.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So it's, I think it's like this whole, what are we featuring? And then there's also sort of this, you know, attention to detail, like lighting, cinematography, clothing, like
artistry,
where it's just sort of like that is in itself sensual and arousing, to just have like this feeling of opulence in sort of like beauty, you know. That doesn't mean that that can't be like a BDSM scene, right? Like it doesn't have to be all like romantic and, you know, whatever, lovey-dovey. But it's just sort of like whatever I'm seeing, I want it to be visually appealing to me. And then I think, you know, the element of, you know, what we talked about, you know, having the talent sort of have agency and autonomy and shooting something with talent that they're into. So it's like either I create something with the talent and with their input, or if I have an idea for something that I want to do, I find talent who, when they hear that, is like, ooh, I want to shoot that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not going to like pair an idea with somebody that's kind of like, yeah, I'm not that into this kind of scenario, but I'll do it anyway, right? Like, I wouldn't do that.
Right. Seems smart anyway, because you're going to get the best product from people who really want to be with each other, or really want to, are really turned on by the ideas that you have.
When it also speaks to like enthusiastic consent, it's like, okay, if you pay me enough, I'll do butt stuff. Like, if it's not your thing, why, like, why would you want to capture that on film?
Yeah, and there's this sort of like, you know, discussion that I feel like we have sometimes where it's like, you know, we watch something as a woman and we see the whatever, the faking and the moaning, and we're not like, okay, that's so fake.
Right.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it seems like a lot of men are still aroused by that. And I'm kind of like, do they not see the difference? And it seems that they don't.
Yeah.
I don't know about that. I have to say, I don't think they, I mean, I think they're very visual creatures, right? I think they're looking at what's going on. They get turned on by it. I mean, if I watch regular mainstream porn, I can feel my body respond.
Sure.
It's not, I don't love it. I'm like, oh, this is so cheesy, but it doesn't not get me a little
turned on.
But
I also think that men would, you probably have a huge male audience.
Oh, I do. I'd say that
because they love
50. And okay, like
I think they love this too.
Right. They do. And let's you know, like I guess go a step back and be like, okay, we don't have to say all men are equal, right?
Sure. If they have more choices.
Right. What all I'm saying is that the conversation that we're having, where we're sometimes wondering for the porn that does exist, that seems to us very obviously like where the woman is faking her pleasure.
Mm-hmm. Right.
There is a lot of that, and it still works for a lot of men. And there's just like a little bit of a like question. Is that because they don't see the difference, or is it, you know, it's just, it's like, and I don't have the answer to that, right? Like, it's just something that I've been wondering. And just going back to your previous point about the being aroused, even though you're not loving it, that's a total, like, you know, research-based thing for women. So women can watch something and say that they're not getting aroused. Like, so there's been tests where, you know, there's been like a, whatever the thing is called, up per vagina, like, you know, to
like a sensor or something.
A sensor that's measuring arousal. And then you're watching pornography and then you're answering questions. Are you into it? Are you not? And so statistically speaking, the discrepancy between what women say they like and what their vagina says they're aroused by is really high.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Like, I think there's only like whatever 10-20% overlap. I'm like kind of making those numbers up, but it's very low.
Right.
And so this, you know, there's also no answer to why that is. I think some people believe that because women have evolved with so much like sexual violence, that the physical response of arousal has been important for, you know, to protect the female body from harm. Mm-hmm. But this is a theory. We don't know if this is true or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or it's just sexually relevant, right? Like genital non-concordance, your body doesn't always respond the way that your brain would respond.
Right, but for women, that's just much higher than for men.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The non-concordance is just, yeah.
So how do you select your talent? And do you have different criteria for selecting female performers versus male performers?
So, I mean, I think there's two different things that I do. So when I shoot feature films for other companies, then there is obviously like characters and it's character based. So casting is about sort of who fits the role, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where at the same time, like for me, there's always like diversity is just always just big, big components, regardless of what I do. But then for sort of like the smaller projects, I feel like it's more about people that vibe with my idea, you know, like, and so that's also now that I've worked with enough talent and people know about me, people reach out to me and they're like, hey, I love what you do. I want to work with you. And so I feel like it's a vibe. It's a, like, they're into this concept. They're into this vision. They're into this, you know, experience. And they're cool people. Yeah, because like you that. Know, like you kind of like spend your life doing this stuff, and you want to do it with people that sort of you like having around, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then you want them to be reliable and respectful, and you know all of the things that is that are essential to creating like the product that I want to. So I'm just choosing people who are, you know, fit that description.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great having people who are already excited about what you do come work for you.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah.
So what impact are you hoping that 4Play Films will have on sort of the adult film industry as a whole? Are you hoping to make an impact there, make some changes there?
Yeah, I absolutely am. And I do think that, you know, sort of this group of more niche, independent, like feminist, you know, porn studios, I think we have started to affect mainstream. I think the fact that we exist shows talent what is possible and sort of like raise sort of their what they're asking for and what they need to have. And it shows bigger studios what's possible and what, you know, should happen. And I do think that there is a trajectory of the porn industry. And I can, you know, I can only speak for sort of the LA sort of mainstream industry where bigger studios are going in a more sort of like consensual and visually like interesting direction. So I definitely think that's happening.
Do you think that's the future of pornography? What sort of developments do you see happening in the industry, both in sort of content and production?
Yeah, I mean, I think also like society does have a huge influence on, you know, companies these days and after Me Too and all of that, like, you know, the height of like Black Lives Matter, you just kind of can't do the things the same way that you used to.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's as our society is changing in a direction, I think porn will be changing in that direction too. you know, when you watch movies from the 90s, you're just like, yeah, that's not possible anymore.
It's pretty cringy now. Yeah.
Yeah. Do and you... I think that's, yeah, like, I mean, porn is part of pop culture, you know? Mm-hmm.
Do you think that pornography is reaching a wider audience right now? Like, I look at the two of us, right? We're like middle-aged moms, right? We're just sort of and talking about pornography. Like, I don't know that 10 years ago, this is a conversation that we would be having. Do you think that porn is becoming more mainstream to a broader audience?
I think so. And I think maybe that is also part of, like, you know, what we're doing, because we're putting out different content that is sort of like more reaches a different audience, you know. And I think people who maybe before weren't sort of into what existed now have things that exist that they're into. And I do, as much as I really, you know, 50 Shades of Grey, like, we don't have to talk about it. But I do think that the impact of it really did affect society and its openness towards sexuality on a whole in a quite big way. That is definitely what I think.
Net positive.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
So your background as a sexual educator, does that have a lot of influence on what you choose to produce?
So I see, like, for me, it's always been important that porn has educational elements. I mean, you know, the way that female sexuality is portrayed and the, you know, gender roles and the relationships and what men think, like, women want and all those things. Like, not only do we portray something different, which I think is sort of obviously subliminally educational, I also try to have more obvious education in the films. Like, I don't know if you saw the last film, that's April Rain and Sage the Flame, that are like having, you know, sexual interactions and then pausing and talking to the camera about what they're doing and why it feels good and how it should be done. So, I mean, that's just one of the examples. Like, I just did like this threesome where we, in the beginning, filmed this whole thing of like how to do a threesome, you know, educational video that's going to be at the beginning of the threesome.
That's cool.
That's great.
Yeah. So I definitely feel like for me, those things are one thing, you know.
Knowledge is sexy.
Mm-hmm. One of our listeners asked us about the use of condoms in porn.
So I have condoms in porn, like, that's really depends on talent, because in porn, like, STI testing is a big thing. Mm-hmm, so people, anybody who's like actively filming has to test all of the things that you haven't even heard of, like, every 2 weeks. Mm. And so it's really up to them what they feel comfortable with. And because you're also making this for their fans and them, so it's sort of like, I'm respecting that. Mm-hmm. But there's definitely been instances where I have used condoms and where I make that part of the film. Like, I don't just try to like hide it and put it on there, but it's like, oh, here's a condom, you know, this is how you use it. Obviously, that's sort of like, you know, if you're in your sex life, doing stuff, you cannot look to porn for these things as sort of like a guideline, because again, people in porn test every 2 weeks. Unless you do that and you have agreements with other people to do the same and then have sex without condoms, you can't do it that way, you know?
Right.
Well, and it's all sort of safer sex practices versus safe sex. So everybody has to kind of make their own judgment as to
100%. And, you know, it's obviously the case, like, if you test every 2 weeks and you have a few shoots in between, obviously there is a risk and it happens. And then, you know, like, 2 weeks later, you have chlamydia and then you can't shoot and you have to take, you know, the antibiotics and this and that. So that's definitely like not uncommon. Like, chlamydia is definitely a huge thing, you know?
Right.
But it's also very treatable. So, you know, that's something that it's as a porn performer, you choose those risks.
Yeah. And I think the question came from more of a standpoint of, that's real. That's what we all do, is we're all using condoms all the time. And to not show it in porn makes them feel like people are promoting not being safe.
Yeah, and I think that is because the information about how porn is made is missing, you know? Yeah.
We've been talking about a lot of benefits to viewing pornography, but what are circumstances where consumption of pornography, even sort of ethical female-empowered pornography, might be unhealthy or problematic for a viewer?
Yeah, I think that's really sort of like for pornography the same as for all the other things that, you know, like alcohol or like shopping or this and that. I feel like if you watch porn or have sex or do anything in a way that's sort of like using it as a coping mechanism, then it can be an issue because A, you're not dealing with the thing that you really should be dealing with. B, it could become an issue where you're kind of so absolved in the thing that you're not doing, you know, like, I don't know, grocery shopping, work, or
paying your bills. Right. Things. Yeah.
Yeah. If you're watching of pornography, if you're, you know, other things, your shopping, your consumption of alcohol, any of those things interfere with your life and make you unable to live life, then there is an issue.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's sort of when you need to take a look and be like, okay, what am I doing here? What am I trying to cover up for? And what's the issue that I'm avoiding that I should be addressing?
So, yeah. And I think pornography has the added sort of challenge of being relatively cheap and readily available. So it's like it can be a tool that somebody uses and abuses pretty easily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like, you know, there's definitely this element where studies have been done that, you know, and especially men, but I'm sure also women, like, do sometimes use pornography to cope with depression and anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
So, but then the porn isn't the problem. It's your depression and your anxiety that's the problem.
It's
and
the drug.
Porn is a coping. Yeah, exactly. And it's sort of like the same. It's like you're self-medicating with porn.
Mm-hmm.
That in itself isn't the issue. The issue is that you're depressed and you're not doing anything about it, like seeing a therapist, or maybe you need to be on, you know, antidepressants. You know, there's these statistics of like porn destroys marriages. It's like, no, what came first? There was probably an unhappy person who was depressed, who was watching porn. And that's why their marriage was destroyed, is because they were unhappy and depressed.
Mm-hmm.
Probably didn't have sex with their wives, but now you're blaming porn. Like, you know, just
right.
Sort of, right. It's a symptom to an underlying issue.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly.
So what are the healthy ways that couples can incorporate ethical porn in their sex lives?
Have to find something that both people are into. Obviously there's sort of like something to be said for some openness to experiment and do a little bit of adventure, even though you're kind of thinking maybe that's not exactly what I want, but I'm, you know, willing to try it. But yeah, again, first and foremost, like, watch something that both people are enjoying. I think it can be a really great way of connecting, sort of the igniting the flame if there's a little bit of a stagnant, you know, situation. Lots of people love just having porn in the background when they're having sex, because it's sort of like, is this heightened experience of sexuality around you. And so there's just sort of like more sexual stimulation going on. So I think that's something really, really great. I mean, you could also do it sort of like watch it by yourself to kind of like get ready and feel turned on, and then meet up and, you know, like it's already, you're already kind of like the tension is there and you're excited.
You can use it for foreplay.
I mean, yes, please. Like, watch porn and have it arouse you. And then, like, you know, you're sitting there, you're watching porn, and, you know, it might lead to sex.
Right.
Between the two of you. The beautiful thing about, you know, ethical, like, feminist porn is I feel like it provides for a more guilt-free watching, because you know that everybody involved has chosen to be there, that the message that's conveyed is, you know, not degrading to women and whatnot. So I think that one of the really big, big pluses is guilt-free porn watching. It makes you feel good without also making you feel bad. Because I think a lot of regular porn, it can make you feel good, and then it's like, ooh, what did I do?
Yes. You know? Why does this turn me on? Ooh. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And that's like with ethical, like feminist porn, you don't have that. You're sort of like, ooh, this is great. Ooh, yeah, I enjoyed the experience. And then it's over and you're like, oh yeah, that was cool.
I love that.
And you don't have to feel bad about it.
Yeah.
Exactly. Making you feel good without also feeling bad. That's my new motto.
I like it.
I like it. I like it. Well, that seems like a great way to end things. Inka, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us. We absolutely love what you're doing. Like you said, we've both watched a number of the films on your site. Highly, highly recommend them.
Hot.
Thank you for putting out female empowered content.
Thank you so much for having me. This was such a pleasure.
That was awesome. I loved her.
Yeah, she's cool.
Yeah. So are you inspired to do some sexy homework?
Some sexy homework. I am. I think what I'm going to do is, you know, we've kind of done this a little bit in the past with Mr. Cat and I looking at porn and seeing kind of what we like and what we don't like. That was a long time ago.
Yeah.
A lot has changed. I mean, we've done this podcast since then and I think we should check in once in a while to see if our ideas or thoughts or feelings about it have changed. So, and maybe I'll use it to tell him some things that I would like. Because I think when I've looked at porn before with Mr. Cat, I've sort of taken a more quiet, like...
Let him kind of drive the content. Yeah. Yeah, I get that.
And not, maybe not diving into the more like, ooh... BDSM or fetish or any of those, because telling your partner what you want is still hard.
It can be hard. Yeah. Yes.
And even when you're guiding them on a porn site with the pictures and even when it's right there, it's still hard to go, ooh, I like that.
Yeah. You don't want to be judged for like the crazy sexy thoughts that you have in your head that you don't share.
But so much has changed since then, right? The conversations between the two of us are insane.
Yeah.
The kinds of things that we talk about, I never would have thought that this would be part of our conversations. So I think that I can much more easily point out things that I like.
Yeah. I love that.
And maybe I'll get to do some of them.
Okay. There you go. You're going to use it as inspiration for bringing it home.
Yes.
I like it.
Or taking it out to a
play date.
Hotel, play date. Yeah. It could be a play date if I could swing some people into to have some fun with us. So.
Oh, I bet.
Right?
You send a little message, hey, do you guys want to sit around and watch porn and then like see what happens? I'm sure you'll get some takers.
Yeah, so we'll see.
Yeah. Awesome.
All right. What about you? What are you going to do?
So I think I'm on a hunt for like, what is my genre? Now that I'm like, okay, I'm done with 90s porn. I'm not really feeling it anymore. Mm-hmm. So like, I want to really actively explore different types of porn, you know, showing different kinds of kinks and maybe like explore some really crazy stuff and see what is out there and kind of drill down on like, what is it that I actually like now? And also use it as an opportunity to look into like some crazy stuff.
Yeah.
Like use it as like an adventure.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right.
So that's what I'm going to do.
Sounds good. I can't wait. This is going to be fun.
It'll be a good one. All right. We'll let you know how it goes.
So that's our show. Thanks for swinging by. And don't forget, you deserve great sex.
Now go get some.
If you love the Two Hot Wives podcast, be sure to subscribe.
And if you really love the show, rate us or give us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify.
Thanks for listening.
Oh, I don't know that we've ever given him a name on the podcast. Should we give him a name?
I thought we had. Sorry if this is all sidebar, but...
No, that's okay. I'm trying to think. Have we given him a name? Let's give him a name right now. What shall we call him?
Antonio. No, totally not an Antonio.
Okay. Well, look, he is Mr. Sexy, February, sexy. So let's call him Frank. No, not Frank. Oh, Frank. Frank doesn't sound sexy. No. What's a sexy Frank? Frederick? That's a little too...
hoity-toity.
Yeah, I agree.
What's a good... on a yacht for Frederick.
What is a good...
Fabio. No, we're not going to call him Fabio. That's terrible. Because you get that.